are tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicka Brown, Chicken Brown Cow. Listeners, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco, alongside
Kelly Cruz.
Kelly, another interesting day in sunny, windy Southern California. We had some trees being blown down at our house. I don't know about you guys, but the wind was definitely in effect.
Our guys actually came and cut our trees intentionally today. It was kind of odd that they did it in the wind, but
the timing is impeccable.
It was good timing.
Well, last week, Kelly, we got into the book review of Location is Still Everything by Professor David Bell. And so if you recall, we talked about the proximity effect, we talked about the similarity effect, and even the homophily effect. We talked about that over two episodes. There was that one dealership that had all those bad reviews or bad responses to their reviews. And so what I would like to start seeing is automakers using that same kind of gravity strategy that Professor Bell talks about as a way to dominate the conversation and bring more awareness to the user experience, or as other terms I like to define the user experience, telematics, connected cars, right? Just the whole idea of it's no longer about the driver and how the driver should be looking at a car that's safe, that has great gas mileage, but now it's about what information is this vehicle telling me about how I can optimize my driving habits so that I can be more efficient, more happy, more whatever the case, right? Just having automakers focus on the telematic technology of a car. And again, using that whole gravity strategy that David Bell talks about. Because then, on one hand, you have these the autonomous / driverless world, this world that everyone's been talking about for probably the last decade or so, and everyone believes that it's going to be in 2020 or right around 2020 that this world will take effect. But this, as we see now, is not true at all. I mean, this idea of the autonomous vehicle world, it's not imminent as people once thought. But there are still, there's still many things that have to happen. Let me correct that. There are still many things that have to happen in order for this driverless world to take form. You need to do things with the infrastructure. You need to evolve technology. You need to be able to analyze and interpret data. And one of the additional factors that's uncontrollable are you have to start shaping people's behavior. Right, you have to get away from the idea of car ownership, right? So this whole idea then of the driverless world, it's great that you have these tech companies getting involved, automakers are starting to get involved, but it still has to happen at the cultural level where you have people that are not as concerned with car ownership. And there was a time once before that there were statistics that millennials were not interested in cars. They'd much rather participate in the ride-sharing economy. But we know now that that's not true, that they're just delaying their purchases of cars, but they still want to have the cars.
So, Dennis, when you say it's not imminent, originally you said a lot of people have predicted it would happen by 2020, but it's not imminent. So we think it's out past 2020?
Yeah, and I'm thinking 2040, right? Because again, you have to have that societal shift. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of where the automotive industry, right? Now, I want to start to clarify some of the terminology here. Automotive to me is starting to become defined as those interested in the buying or selling of cars, essentially car ownership, right? Automakers, dealers, and everything in between that. But then the rival to that, and it is a rival now, is it's transportation. It's the legislative elements. It's the it's just the city, the state, the federal aspects of transportation, of vehicle ownership, that is really starting to draw the line in the sand. And they're the ones that are winning this war, if you will, of what's going to happen with the future of automotive, what's going to happen with the future of autonomous cars, right? It's transportation. It's that society. It's that culture that is now superseding that of automakers and dealers.
Right. It's the, as things shift more towards transportation, whether it's ride sharing or public transportation or automated vehicles, you're shifting away from, as you define it, kind of the automotive world of really being interested in the type of car you're buying, because it's just a whole different industry at that point.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, right? Like when you own a car, that came from the manufacturer, went through the distribution channels to the retailing process, then now in your hands. Well, now when you have, you know, there's reportedly 2.5 billion cars circulating in the world. So with 2.5 billion cars circulating in the world, it's like, well, this is, you know, cars now are no longer just a product, but it's a commodity now that you can trade with, you can use for whatever purposes. And that's where transportation, ride hailing, ride sharing, all those things are coming into effect now. And you know, slowly the automotive industry is starting to be baffled and not know how to respond to this to this dynamic shift.
Right.
So this is one of the things that we're going to be focusing on over the next few weeks, Kelly, as we do start to bring in more guests and experts who are involved in fields such as telematics and connected cars and also government officials who can speak about, you know, where this is going. There's especially with the elections coming up, there's going to be a couple legislative items that states will be voting on. So we'll pay close attention to that. But let's get into our automation segment with our resident expert. He's host of Boost, Booze, and BBQ. So be sure you go check out that Facebook page. You can find the episode notes also on this page or on this episode. But Andy, welcome back to Wisco Weekly. Tell us what's going on in the field of automation.
Dennis, Kelly, thanks so much for having me, you guys. Great to be here.
Of course, always great to have you. So tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods.
There are some really incredible things happening right now. I don't know if you've seen it in the news. Dubai, as we know, tends to be on the forefront of some of these new technologies with, you know, building their island resorts and building the tall buildings that are very architecturally beautiful. Well, Dubai is making some steps towards automating their police fleet as well. They have recently released a prototype of essentially a mobile police station. At the GitX Technology Week exhibit this past weekend, they unveiled several different models. And the idea is that these will be able to come out to where you are, and you'll be able to take supplies or file a complaint or speak with a police officer via the automated station. And they can take statements, and they can view the situation in your area. And these mobile police stations will also be accompanied by a whole fleet of drones that are all being set up to be deployed. And essentially, they're projecting that within 19 seconds, a drone could be over an area where there's a complaint or a crime happening. And then this fully automated police station could be on its way there within minutes. So it's really speaking towards their forward thinking. But I don't want you to think that they're just doing things that are a concept and maybe could be something that happens. They're actually taking actionable steps, because they've also unveiled a whole fleet of fully automated taxis. No drivers, no one behind the wheel. They're unveiling this test fleet as essentially a first mile or last mile taxi service to get you from their already existing tram system or bus system to your hotel or to your destination. The vehicles will be limited to a top speed of 20 miles an hour and can hold up to 4 people. And they are a fully autonomous fleet that is being literally put on the road this coming weekend.
Thanks for sharing that, Andy. Pretty amazing to hear what they're doing there in Dubai. As you were talking about that, I was just wondering, have you seen examples of other things, whether in the automotive space or otherwise, where, you know, we see it in Dubai as, like you said, on the forefront of this type of technology that made its way to the U.S.?
Well, fortunately, that may not be very far off, because just a few days ago, the U.S. Department of Transportation announced that it will no longer assume that drivers of commercial vehicles need to be human. They are, in quotations, adapting the definitions of driver and operator to recognize that such terms don't refer exclusively to a human, but may in fact include an automated system. These statements were part of a 70-page document that were released, giving a rough outline of the agency's proposed changes to federal laws and regulations. I think that seeing legislation like this is a really good sign for what's going on stateside. I think that whether or not this is something that goes through now or something that goes through in 4 or 8 years, the fact that people are talking about it and there are proposals on deck waiting to be seen, I think that's a very good sign for us.
In Dubai, which, as I'm looking up, has a population a little over 3 million, they are already implementing an autonomous taxi service, whereas in the United States, with a population of 300 million, we are still going through the regulation and legislative process in order to begin the discussion to implement driverless taxis. I think that this is a good indication that in the United States, where you do have smaller cities, and probably that's probably the reason why in Arizona they have one of the more favorable laws towards autonomous vehicles, that it's going to be in these smaller cities that you will start to see autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles being implemented.
I agree 100%. The fact that Dubai is doing it, you've got a couple of things going on with Dubai. They have a lot of money and they have a much smaller population and, of course, a centralized government for those in their populace. Here in America, we have 50 states, and then within those states, we have counties. Within those counties, we have cities, and the demographic across the United States varies so wildly. And even though we do have a lot more people in our country, and we would benefit greatly from all of this automation that's happening with vehicles, it just takes longer to get things through because we have so many different governments to go through. We don't have the one centralized. And we have so many people to poll and talk to that have differing opinions. We don't just have 3 million people that we can quickly sift through. We have 360 million people. So it just takes a lot longer to get those types of things through our system. But I have no doubt that we will reach it at some point, if for no other reason besides the fact that it just does the companies well. You know, automation's been very focused on electric vehicles and green vehicles and reducing carbon emissions and things like that. But the component that they're leaving out is that, you know, truck drivers, for instance, long-haul truck drivers, they are limited to a specific amount of time that they can drive every day, and they need to take specific breaks, and they need to have times where they're not driving, and they need to sleep. And that's all monitored by GPS. You can't fudge that anymore. But if you had a long-haul truck that was filled with your mail or filled with the things that you order from Amazon, and it was able to just drive 48 hours back-to-back across the country, it's not only going to reduce the amount of time that it takes to get to you, it's going to reduce the wear and tear on the vehicle, it's going to reduce the emissions, because starting and stopping, driving through a city to try to find food or try to find lodging or just to find a bathroom. You know, all of those things affect the fuel efficiency of a big rig truck like that. And so if you can just run continually flat out at a consistent speed the entire time, I think it would cut fuel costs. I think it would cut delivery costs. And I think that that might be where we really start seeing some changes being made as far as driverless vehicles go. I really do think it's going to start with the long haul trucks.
Well, if anything, then that sounds interesting and definitely a topic we'll continue to follow, because whereas the greatest need for these mobility vehicles is going to be in your cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York, this, you know, based on a small population like Dubai, based on big rigs being automated, you're kind of almost looking at more of middle America for a faster adoption of autonomous vehicles. But we will follow this topic with you, Andy, as society progresses. So, Andy, thank you again for your automation segment. Okay, Kelly, so I want to talk to you because you are going to be in the market soon for a vehicle, are you not?
That's right.
So as we previously discussed, you currently have a Toyota Sienna.
Yes.
And you lease the car, mm-hmm. and your lease is coming up, and you're thinking about getting into something else, still a van.
Likely a van.
But
or
you could
SUV.
Be or SUV, something that can haul around you, your husband, and your two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I would get the chance to play attorney here and put you on the witness stand.
All right.
And go through if anything a car buying boot camp, where I get to question you to see what you've thought about, how you still view car buying, what's the process that you might be looking at cars, shopping for cars, negotiating, everything over however many episodes we've done now, over 40 episodes of talking about car buying, customer experience, the future of automotive.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to put you on the stand and to see what you've learned here as a co-host on Wisco Weekly. You good to go?
I think I'm ready.
I know you're ready. You're probably not even taking this. You're probably approaching this more as a game as opposed to like being serious about this.
You said 20 questions. It's
like a trivia game, right?
All
totally
right.
is. Okay. Okay. So let's start, Kelly. First off, again, I'm just going to go into 20 questions. I'll kind of serve as just as an advisor to you, but also we'll get into more like scenarios where I'll act like I'm the salesperson. I'm going to ask you something. Let's see what your response is. And then I'll go back and say, hey, here's the counter response to what you said. Okay.
Can you handle it, Dennis?
Oh, snaps. Here we go. So first off, have you decided what is a deal breaker to you in the car that you're or in the van you're looking for? Any options that you have to have that you don't have to have? Any colors that you won't do, that you only will do, any deal breakers?
Most of the deal breakers would relate to options in the car. Colors are probably not that big of a factor. I think we always have our preference of more neutral colors, black, whites, grays, but open enough. And so it's really just features of, you know, things that maybe are more standard in cars these days.
Such as what?
Automatic opening doors. So, you know, again, maybe most vans or cars would have it these days. I suppose if we get into an SUV, it wouldn't have the automatic doors, you know, Bluetooth, just that kind of. So we're pretty basic in terms of the options we need.
Okay. And now how or where are you going to start your shopping process, or have you started your shopping process?
We have not started the shopping process because we haven't quite narrowed down the exact car that we want. But once we do, I like to always start online. So I imagine we'll do the same.
And when you say start online, paint me a picture. Are you going to Google? Are you typing keywords? Are you going to specific websites? What are you doing?
Likely dealership. So once we decide, let's say we're going to get into another Toyota Sienna, I'm going to find, you know, 3 fairly local Toyota dealerships and reach out to say, you know, give me a quote on a Toyota Sienna based on a lease or a purchase with kind of the terms that I want.
And so now this is at the point you're already contacting a dealership, but prior to contacting a dealership, you're doing some research still. Yes or no?
Yes. So I would say that as we're looking at vans, we have done a little bit of research. Do we stick with a Toyota Sienna? What else is highly rated? And so my husband has done some research. He's considered a Chrysler Pacifica. That's a whole nother story. Just in terms of kind of feeling, I feel like Chrysler Pacifica.
Why is that a different story?
I feel like Toyotas, Hondas have a good reputation, and not that Chryslers have a bad reputation. I just haven't felt as much like I know that's a trusted product. If we went with, you know, Honda Odyssey or Toyota Sienna, I feel like it's, you know, it just feels like a safer choice.
That to me tells me this is a generational influence. This is like the older generation influence on you today as a 48-year-old woman.
It sounds like you said 48, and I am not 48. Just saying. Okay.
Well, we'll leave it mysterious there. Okay. So, but anyhow, fair enough. You don't have that good of a impression, or you're not so familiar with Chrysler to have that trust in that brand as you do with Toyota.
It would require more research and a test drive, whereas we've had a Sienna, so we know what that feels like. I've had family members own Honda Odysseys, so I know what that feels like. So the Chrysler would require more research and a test drive before I would actually start reaching out to get numbers.
Okay, so you've kind of narrowed it down to the brands of interest. The features you're looking for in the car are, let's call it above basic, mid-level. I mean, again, you're right in that I'm sure a lot of things you're going to be looking for are probably pretty standard on these cars now.
And some pretty important ones would be backup camera, but not the, you know, tiny in the rear view mirror backup window, kind of a fuller screen, maybe like connections for iPhones these days, the Apple CarPlay or whatever it is.
Again, those are actually going to be pretty standard. There was legislation that had passed a couple of years ago that made it mandatory for all automakers to install backup sensors, mm-hmm. At least backup sensors. And so there's people who have taken it insofar as, well, we'll just do a camera, the sensor could be a camera too. You can either have the sensors that gauge distance, the sonars essentially, or you can do the camera. And so in either case, the van you're going to be looking at will have that as standard.
Okay.
Some of the Bluetooth or plugging in your phones, the CarPlay feature, I don't know if that's going to be mandatory for you, but I think that one might be a little bit tricky. I think Honda does. I'm sure probably Toyota too. They do have Apple CarPlay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you're contacting dealers. You had mentioned that you would contact about three of them. What is so? You're searching for three dealerships. Are you pre-qualifying them at all?
Or the dealerships?
Yes.
No, because I think that they're larger shops. I mean, if I've looked at the shops that I've dealt with before, they're not small independents, or we're not buying a used car in most cases. And so they're fairly large, dealerships that I'm less concerned about their qualifications, or, if I'm buying a new car, I presume they're going to have just as, good of quality of car. And it's just really a matter of inventory, the person I'm dealing with, and price.
Well, now you recall there's many different evolutions now in the manner in which you can buy a car. So you may not have to necessarily, let's say, call three people, mm-hmm. to try to work out a deal. For instance, there was one of the companies, for instance, like Roadster, mm-hmm. Where you can kind of do that entire buying process online, or as they call it, omnichannel. So you can be in their store and kind of work a deal out, or you can be out of store at home and still work out a deal and submit all your information and have it all ready to go for you. Mm-hmm. There's AutoGravity, where you can you can download the app and then essentially find out all your best deals and who has the best deal. So would you still want to contact, at least three dealerships, or would you rather go kind of a more uniform process that would, you know, it's almost like it's a bridge to take you to those three dealerships.
So because I haven't used, even though I know we've had some episodes where we've talked with, you know, people who have worked for these particular, I don't say applications, but vendors, I haven't experienced it. So I don't know if I go on and plug in the car, are they just kind of sourcing inventory to say, you know, this dealership is offering at this price, and this gets back to my, well, whatever they offer first can't be the lowest price. So, you know, it's if you're sourcing
rule
it through,
number one of negotiating, right, always turn down the first offer. Right.
So I think if I'm going to one application, it would seem I'm only going to get one response, but maybe that's not how it works. So it could be an interesting experiment to try it out. But
So you haven't considered it. What would make you consider it? I mean, of course, I'm bringing it up to you now, but what would make you consider doing, you know, buying this van, or in this case, leasing, different than what you've been doing before?
I'm always open to new options. So I think if the feedback from you, who I trust your experience and advice,
she just gave me a wink there as if like to sarcastically imply that she really doesn't trust me, but I actually
do mean it, Dennis. I would try out something new. If it's a streamlined process, why not? Because I've certainly expressed complaints before about the time it takes or the misinformation you get in going through multiple emails and phone calls, getting to the dealership, you know, the price they told you doesn't necessarily apply. So I would be happy to start with one of those programs to see how it works, as long as I'm not having to give a bunch of personal information.
Okay, so actually that was going to be kind of a part of my next question here, and that is the criteria for picking a dealership. So you're already stating that, you know, if you go down the more traditional path of contacting multiple dealers to find out the best quote, the one thing that you definitely don't want to be doing is submitting a lot of your information, name, phone, email, and that's probably really it.
That's right. Those three things. And I think I would generally just put in the request to say, assume that I have top tier credit, because I know that I do. And I feel like at least I know that can influence the offering in terms of the lease or the price.
Now, are you double checking that you have top tier credit?
I'm certain, just based on recent processes we've gone through.
How recent?
Within the last year. And there's nothing that would have changed that credit.
Okay, fair. And okay, so tell me some other criteria for, you know, picking a dealer. I mean, essentially, if it's a salesperson or a dealership, how would you want them to work with you?
Straightforward, provide the information that I'm requesting. So if I say that I want to do a 3-year lease at 10,000 miles a year with, you know, kind of drive-offs only, I want them to come back and confirm in writing, here's the information, the price, the monthly payments, based on that criteria. I feel like sometimes the response is not direct, and so they tell you some information, but it doesn't really answer the questions that I asked or include that criteria.
And so now you send an email, for instance. Are you emailing? Are you calling? How are you sending out the initial communication?
Usually going directly to that dealership website, mm-hmm, and either looking through inventory and choosing that car to say, I want to send an inquiry, or just sending a general inquiry through, like when you start, that you want to get a quote on a car. And so maybe it's a general email that I just explain the type of car I'm looking for, as opposed to choosing specific one in the inventory.
Dear Kelly, thank you for your interest in our Toyota Sienna. You are interested in leasing this car. That's great. This car is available. We have this in stock. I know that you're looking for a quote, and I can certainly provide that to you. Are you available for a phone call? Send.
Please provide the information via email first in terms of pricing, and then we can have a follow-up phone call.
In order to properly give you the most accurate quote, I'm going to need some additional information from you. It would be great if we can hop on a quick call so that I can collect all the necessary information so that I can provide you with all the different incentives and discounts that are awarded to you.
I'm happy to take a quick call. I'm an easy sell on that from that standpoint. No, I really am. I feel like I'll push a little bit, but I have no problem with a phone call. At least in my experience, I've never found that I've been on the phone for more than 10 minutes at a time. And at worst, they now have my phone number, whereas maybe before I only provided my email.
Okay.
And I'm okay with that.
Okay. So then ring, ring. Hello, Kelly. This is Dennis from Wisco's Toyota store. I sent you the email regarding your quote. You wanted to lease one of the cars we had in stock. Have you had the chance to look at this car pretty in depth online?
I have.
And how soon are you looking to get this vehicle, Kelly?
Somewhat flexible, within the next 30 to 60 days.
And are you trading in a car at all?
I'm coming up on the end of a lease.
Oh, what lease do you have?
I currently have a Toyota Sienna.
Well, that is splendid.
I love your enthusiasm.
Well, that's great, because you will apply for some kind of loyalty for having an existing Toyota lease. Do you know what your payoff is on that Toyota lease?
I do.
Great. Do you happen to know the miles on that car as well?
Yes, I do. And I know that we're well under the allotted miles for the lease term as well.
That's excellent. Do you have some time today you can bring by the car?
I don't want to go to that step until I understand more what you have available in terms of pricing options.
Certainly. Have you had the chance to test drive this car, Kelly? The one that you expressed an interest in?
I have not driven the new car, the new model, but given that we currently have a Toyota Sienna, I'm not concerned with the kind of drivability of the car.
Okay, changing scenes real quick. Have you had the chance to drive this Chrysler Pacifica?
I have not.
Would you like to schedule a time this Saturday to come in and drive the Pacifica, and that way I can take a look at your car and present to you a full package deal and give you my best price?
I do want to come by and test drive, but I'll have a limited amount of time, so I don't want to get into kind of the deal and assessing the current car, but I do want to test drive and make sure this is something I like.
Is there a way that maybe I can bring the car to you? Are you local to Orange County?
I am, and that would actually be amazing.
Excellent. I will bring the car to you. I will bring the car that you expressed an interest in the Pacifica, and then at that time you can test drive the car. Oh, look at that. Siri's talking to me here. That's weird. Okay, so I will bring the car to you, Kelly, and you can then test drive the car, and at that point we can speak a little further about the quote. Will that be okay with you?
That would be very helpful.
Okay, well, so that would be a typical call you would get from a salesperson who's going to try everything in their power to provide you with a quote. Now, obviously, it could, that may work out for you, that you realize that, hey, look, I'm between the Sienna and a Pacifica, but because this guy is volunteering to do these things for me, that's kind of winning my business, and it's making the transaction easier for me, right?
Absolutely. I mean, maybe that's newer. The last time I only got a car a year ago, the other car, not the Sienna. And I've never had someone offer to bring a car to me. And I'm all about convenience and efficiency of time.
So here's the interesting thing on you as the respectfully average consumer, right, of being a car shopper is, on one hand, there's not going to be a lot of dealerships that would probably offer that outright to you, right? Because on their end, it's much easier for you to come into the store and not just drive this car, but then you can see everything else, right? Of course, that makes sense. But certainly, there's definitely dealerships out there who will, if they don't volunteer, you can definitely ask for it and they will accommodate. I think it's one of those things, though, too, and I'm sure, this is, whereas there could be some people who will take advantage of that type of service, I don't see you doing that. Obviously, one of the reasons is because you're, 30, 60 days away from your lease ending, so it's like you have to do something, mm-hmm. so that can bode in your favor. So chalk that up to leverage you have on your end that, you know, again, if there is pushback from a dealer that's like, nah, you should come here. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm like 30, 60 days away and I'm trying to make this as streamlined as possible here and, you know, whatever the case. Because I think it'd be on your end too, right? If let's say you're looking at, let's just say you narrow it down between two cars or two vans, the mm-hmm. Toyota Sienna and the Chrysler Pacifica in this case, right? If you were to do three dealerships of each, that's six dealerships. That's a lot of work.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. Are you doing a spreadsheet? Or are you just doing handwritten notes? Or how are you logging all this?
So usually I wouldn't be asking for quotes until I narrow it down to the specific car. So I don't think I would start getting quotes on two different cars. But once I do get them, I usually just handwrite it on a piece of paper of like the name of the person, the phone number, the quote they gave me. So I can kind of compare what I have on paper as opposed to, I don't feel like there's enough information. Usually it's in a condensed period of time that I don't need a spreadsheet to refer to.
New scene. Okay, Kelly. So yeah, you mentioned you have a quote on a Chrysler Pacifica for drive offs down, which equates to about $1,500. And we have a $600 payment here for you. So now you are, let's say somebody sent you that quote and now you're shopping that quote. Mm-hmm. And so here's the scene.
Okay.
Yes, Kelly. So I see that you have a quote here from another dealer that you're putting down $1,500 and you have a $600 payment on this wonderful Chrysler Pacifica, way better than a Toyota Sienna. Mm-hmm. What is it going to take to earn your business, Kelly?
I have to see the numbers.
Well, what if I can beat this?
That would be a good start.
Could I interest you in coming on down today or a time that's best and I will beat this quote for you?
I would like to get an email with the numbers just so I can compare it and based on where we live and convenience of the dealership and kind of compare the, you know, what I have on the table before I spend the time to come down.
What would it take to get you in today to make this deal happen?
If you send me an email with the information and if it's better than what I have here by enough that...
How much better does it have to be?
You give me your best number and I'll let you know.
Well, you have a deal here at $600 a month and $1,500 down for 36 months and 10,000 miles. Everything that you had asked for and you're looking for. What would it take for you to say, you know what? Dennis, I will come down to your store tonight if you can do this deal for me.
Again, I need to know what your number is. I assume that you can beat it, otherwise we wouldn't be on the phone, but I need to know what that number is.
Ah, she's a poker player, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, excellent. Let's move on here. So what if we look at finance and insurance products, right? At the time that you had consummated the deal, mm-hmm. now you are sitting in another office, signing papers and also being presented with additional products that would help protect your car. Either, mm-hmm. again, if it's warranty stuff, if it's aesthetic protection packages, I'm sure you know the gamut of some of these F&I products, maybe not all the details of it, but let's just say that you would want to buy something. You've obviously had a van for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know how you use it. You know how you maintain it and care for it.
Right.
What would be something of interest to you that you would want to buy? And again, let's not even talk about the price yet. Mm-hmm. What product would you say, you know what, if they offered me X, I would buy X?
So I'll say generally I'm not going to buy any add-ons, but yet every time I sit in an office and hear the options, I seriously consider them because it always sounds like a good deal. The person's generally a good salesman.
She's a sucker for a sale.
I am. And so thank goodness I usually have either husband there or for a long time I would have to call my dad. I would step out and call and say, Dad, they're offering me this for this price. Do I do it? And most of the time he would say no, and that would convince me. So I would say in the past when I've turned down kind of what I'll call these add-ons, I've never had a time yet where I've regretted it, knock on wood. So I'm less inclined to do it. If I had had experiences in the past where I had a bunch of dings and then I went back and turned a lease in and they charged me a bunch of money, or I spent way more on maintenance than I expected. So I would probably, the only one I would really consider is probably more of a maintenance package. You know, I know we're going to get our oil changes. We've had to replace brakes because my husband likes to drive aggressively. So depending on what was involved there, and I have an idea of some of the amounts we've spent, I would consider a maintenance package.
So usually, well, this, I guess, depends on manufacturer, because I know brakes are sometimes included. Most likely they're not included. So then if they were to pre-sell you brakes, would you be interested in that?
Just brakes? Because I'm not going to tell them we've had an issue with brakes or that we had to replace them on the
last car. Why wouldn't you?
I would feel kind of awkward about saying that we're hard on the car and we had to replace the brakes. And I think that they have more general packages that would cover more than just brakes. So I wouldn't give away, like, here's what I think I need, because then, of course, they're going to hard sell it. I would just like to listen to the options.
So, you know, brakes, just as much as tires, are normal wear and tear items. Doesn't matter how hard or soft you are on them. Mm-hmm. Over a 3-year lease, they're going to have to be replaced at some point. Either you're going to pay for them, or if you didn't drive enough miles, hopefully you can hold on to the car that you don't pay for them, and then the, you know, the dealership ends up paying for it when they look to resell it. Mm-hmm. So in not disclosing that, I mean, I guess put you this way, you can always say no.
Right.
So it still might be in your best interest to say that, because, you know, one of the things, there's two things that can happen, right? One, if you do find a good F&I person, they're going to be able to show you the cost of, hey, if you, in 2 years, when you need these brakes, and you're going to come back to our store, hopefully you will, because we are the internet store. Let's say you don't go here. I mean, you go to another Chrysler dealership or another Toyota dealership. We're all relatively the same price. So you're going to spend $500 for a brand new set of brakes, for brake pads and rotors, actually. Yeah, pads and rotors. So you're going to spend that $500 in 2 years, but Kelly, we got a great deal today. You can spend $250, 50% off, if you buy this package today, which in 2 years, when you do get your brakes changed, you don't got to pay for them. You already pay for it now. You can pay this in cash, or we could include it onto your payment, which would increase your payment by $4, $5. Probably a little less than that. What would you like to do?
Let me think about it for a moment.
Still thinking about it, which is okay, because again, you may not be able to include it in your financing, and that's probably the bigger thing of delaying the decision. Mm-hmm. Is include, and this is kind of where dealerships want to, this is where they want you to say yes, right? Because as opposed to now getting a $600 payment, it's much easier for somebody to, it's much easier for a dealership to say, Kelly, why don't you increase your payment to $604 as opposed to paying me, you know, or paying the dealership $250. I don't know what the math is actually, but whatever. Or, you know, what the math is per month,
right,
for $250. Anyhow. Okay. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it irks me to add stuff to my payment or to add some amount to the monthly payment, because I feel like after all the steps of researching cars, understanding what kind of their basic specials would be, going out to, you know, several dealerships, you know, kind of comparing prices and getting to the point where I felt very good about my deal, even though I've added on something to the package or a service or a maintenance package, I feel like that's not the deal that I originally had, and not because it's the dealership's fault, but I'd rather just pay for it on the side than change my monthly payments and then see that every month, especially if it's something that I later regret. Like, I'll just, as a quick side story, I don't remember if it was on my Camry or something else, where I bought a car, I think it was my Highlander. I was leasing the car, and we get in at the very end, and they basically tell me that in order for them to engage the security system, I have to pay an extra $400, and they'll add it to the monthly payments, And I thought, well, of course I need the security system on the car. And then I just felt like I got ripped off. Like, who has to pay to activate the security system that's in the car? That was one of those that I was very unhappy that I had paid for. Whereas brakes, I know we actually just spent $800 on the brakes not that long ago, and I wish we had reconsidered our other options. And so if someone said, we'll include it for $250, you know, maybe it's worth it, even though we may never have to replace the brakes. Then we get the brakes, you know, the brakes replaced at a reduced cost.
So something to keep in mind too here, right, in disclosing information. Again, especially since you're going to be getting these quotes via email or a phone call, hey, you might as well ask what the price is of certain products, or, you know, again, maybe disclose the brakes, you know, what is that going to cost in 2 years if you paid a la carte versus is there a package that covers that? Now, I think the key thing here, though, is because you'll be able to do the math yourself, is that ask what the retail price is or what the price is if you just paid that separately.
But I feel like it's always marked up at the dealership. And when I'm sitting in
that, it is marked up.
Right. And when I'm sitting in that room trying to get to the end of the deal and sign the papers and I've been there for 4 hours and then I have to reconsider whether I want something else and I'm in the room and they tell me, well, if you come in later and pay for it, it's going to be $500. Well, how do I know that I couldn't get it for substantially less somewhere else that's the same quality? And it could be 7 o'clock at night. Like, I don't have time to go out and do research. So I hate to make that decision on the spot. So like you said, great point that you asked for it ahead of time. So I know whether it's a good deal and something we would want to do.
Yeah. The key thing, just ask for it in advance and they should be able to get you that information. Mm-hmm. And now here again, this is where there are some of those other apps or digital retailing services that will disclose all this information to you. So therefore, you don't even have to guess. And you know, again, this is not a matter, I mean, at the end of the day, you will start to see this where either you're going to prepay for these products at a reduced cost. That's one of the reasons why that you're prepaying it is mm-hmm. because they're hoping to earn your business now as opposed to later.
So, I think they're hoping that they earn your business now and you never actually use it, but.
Well, and quite honestly, that
it's
that,
like insurance.
Yeah, and that does happen. Now, that I would say that happens more often when people realize that they buy something that they know was, you know, it was totally frivolous. It was spur of the moment where they bought this new shiny toy and they wanted to make sure in 3 years that car was absolutely protected so that they made all these purchases now. They got things like a ding and dent removal mm-hmm. where nothing happens to the car for a year and a half, 2 years, and you forget that you paid, you know, a fairly insignificant amount, maybe $500-$700 for this thing, and you included a part of your payment, and you kind of forget that, oh, what was that thing that I got? I don't know what it was. I don't want to look through my paperwork mm-hmm. and not realizing that you had this stuff because the one thing that, you know, dealerships, yeah, it's mostly dealerships, you know, you call into the service and you say that you have a problem with your ding and, or, you know, you have a ding on your car and you want to know how much it costs to get it fixed. Either I'm most certain they don't readily have that information available on the service end. They'll have it more on the sales end. But again, you would have to know on your end to call sales as opposed to service.
Right.
So they, you know, sales would have it, but service wouldn't. And so because they don't know if you have it, they would just say, yeah, oh, that's going to cost you $300. And it's like, shoot, I just paid $500 for it. And I get so much more, you know, services as a part of that ding and dent program. Mm-hmm. So, okay, Kelly, you may step down.
Thank you, Dennis.
My own judgment and assessment, if I'm talking to the jury now, I think you are ready to go. You're going to be a tough negotiator. But I'm hoping that there's going to be someone listening who's just going to know you inside and out, and it's going to be so easy for you.
Right.
So, listeners, we'll have to stay tuned. Kelly will update us on how her buying process will be. And if you're lucky enough to sell Kelly a car, you know what? We're going to bring you on the show and we're going to talk about it. And you get to talk to us, give us the third-party account of how Kelly was as a customer. Because I can tell you, if I'm her salesperson, oh, yeah, she's high maintenance. I know that from the start.
It's good practice.
Okay. Well, listeners, thanks for tuning into this episode of Wisco Weekly. Please stay tuned for more episodes as we are coming up on Automobility LA and the LA Auto Show. We have a lot of episodes that will be discussing connected cars, telematics. We're even going to have a representative from Automobility on the show here to talk about what's going on the show. Kelly, anything on your end?
It's been a good little exercise. Thanks, Dennis.
You want to buy this weekend, don't you?
I know. I can't wait to come back and tell you how it goes.
Okay, listeners, stay tuned for another episode of Wisco Weekly. As we end every episode, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salud, kampai, mabruk, tut ziens, to the customer experience.
Visit WiscoWeeklyPod.com and listen to more dealer executives share their customer experience. You can hear more about the dealer operations, such as amenities they offer and other buying programs that may be of relevance to you. So that's WiscoWeeklyPod.com. You can even chat with us live about the show or get car advice.